JPL with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome to episode number 109 of Robots. I am Jana and today we will visit the Jet Propulsion Laboratory JPL Open House 2012 with Ron van der Klee. But first, as always, let's get the latest news and developments in robotics from Christine.
Thank you, Jana. In a joint press release, US companies InTouch Health and iRobot have announced a new telepresence robot for hospitals. The robot called RP Vita builds on iRobot's AVA platform introduced at last year's Consumer Electronics Show. Similar to the AVA, the RP Vita uses a tablet as the user interface and has autonomous mapping and navigation capabilities. In addition, the RP Vita can connect with diagnostic devices such as otoscopes and ultrasound, and comes equipped with the latest electronic stethoscope. The robot is currently pending clearance by the US Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, with results expected in the last quarter of 2012. In other news, US company Mazar Robotics announced this week that its Renaissance robot platform received US FDA clearance. The Renaissance platform is a surgical guidance system currently in use at 34 hospitals for spine surgery. Following the latest clearance, the system is now also approved for positioning of surgical instruments and implants during brain surgery in the US. The US FDA clearance for brain surgery follows another clearing by the Korean Food and Drug Administration for the Renaissance's use for spine surgery just last month. For more information on a new telepresence robot for hospitals and the new Renaissance robot platform, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
The annual open house at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, welcomes more than 38,000 visitors each year. The theme for 2012 was Great Journeys, inviting visitors to share in the wonders of space through high-definition 3D videos, live demonstrations, and interactions with scientists and engineers. This year's open house also allowed visitors a first look at JPL's new Earth Science Center and saw the first annual mobile phone scavenger hunt. John van der Klee was there for us to have a look around.
It's 9 a.m. on Sunday 10th of June, a beautiful summer day, and I've arrived in California to attend the Jet Propulsion Laboratory's 2012 open house. Nestled in the Pasadena foothills, JPL is the leading research and development center dedicated to the scientific exploration of space and Earth with robotic spacecraft on behalf of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA. This annual open house allows JPL to share their latest journeys with the public, offering exhibitions, videos and shows, participation in activities, and the opportunity to engage with many of the institute's scientists and engineers, which is exactly what I did. I walked through the main gate, past NASA security, and found myself in the mall area, where I came face to face with three very different yet intricate looking robots who are the centerpieces of the Mars exploration booth. I spoke to software engineer Todd Lightwin about the rovers Scarecrow, Athlete, and the twins Spirit and Opportunity.
Tent has three different displays. Two of them are centered around Mars. This is a full-size model of the Mars exploration rovers, the two of which landed on Mars in January of 2004. And the one over here is a skeletal mobility test platform, full-size but stripped down, just the chassis of the Mars Science Laboratory Curiosity rover that's on its way to Mars right now. due to be landing on August 5th or 6th, depending which side of the country you're on. So late in the day. This one is called Athlete. It has not flown. It is an experimental vehicle that we're using to develop technologies. Six-limbed vehicle. Both these legs are both legs, but they can also be used as arms. They have clamps on the side that can be used to pick up tools and do manipulation. There have been a variety of things that have been proposed for a vehicle like this. The original concept was to go to the moon as part of the manned mission to the moon and to carry payloads and to carry habitat modules for the astronauts, such as this mock-up that you'll see right here.
Oh, I see. Sorry, Todd, what do you actually do at...
I write software. I'm an engineer, and I've worked on all three of these. I've written software that's on board the Mars Exploration Rover, Spirit and Curiosity, also on the Spirit and Opportunity, the MSL vehicle over here, Curiosity, and also Atlas.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
I'm now speaking with mechanical engineer Megan Richardson.
My name is Megan Richardson. I'm a mechanical engineer here at JPL. And this right here that we're looking at is called Scarecrow. It is a mass model of the Mars Science Laboratory rover. It's designed to be about one-third of the mass of the real rover. And the point behind that being that the real rover, when it's sent full-scale to Mars, is only under about one-third of the gravity of Earth. So if you want to test cases and where you're driving around and you want to see if you would slip on a certain slope or if you would be able to get over a certain rock, you would want to test with something that weighed one-third of the weight.
And what sort of power supply do you have on the
This one is just running off of a battery, and we plug it in so it runs off electricity. But the actual Mars Science Laboratory is nuclear powered.
Okay. And does that mean that each one of those wheels has an independent motor and a drive for turning it?
That's correct. Each wheel has its own motor. But all the joints that move it are passive. So you'll notice as it drives over rocks, if you look at the very top of the rover body, it stays very flat. And that's just due to the design of the joints, what we call a rocker bogey system. It's able to drive over obstacles without changing the tilt of the body very much.
Okay. With the wheels, I noticed they're aluminium, but it's running over rocks. Is it chewing off a lot of material, or is it designed to withstand that?
It's designed to withstand that. I don't know too much about the design, but everything that you see that's black on there is aluminum, and everything that's on the inside, like the hub, is made out of titanium, because the wheels are also the landing system. We land on the wheels as well. So I'm not so sure about the specifics and how it wears going over rocks, but we have tested this one quite a bit, and we have a full-scale electronic model that we test as well with the wheels.
Is the goal to actually drop the vehicle from a specific height onto the surface?
I'm not sure exactly what the heights are, but if you've heard of a sky crane, sky crane's how we're supposed to be landing this one, and it essentially acts as a jetpack for the rover. So once you've deployed the parachute and you've slowed yourself down as much as you're going to, we release the parachute, and the jetpack slows us down to almost a hover, lowers the rover on cables until the wheels touch the ground, and then it will release the cables, and the sky crane vehicle will fly away and crash lands somewhere far away from us.
I overheard that you're involved in the drill.
I am, yes.
You're the principal person behind the drill bits?
I am not the principal person behind the drill bits, no. I'm on a team of many people who we test the drill. So right now we have a copy of the drill and the sample processing system and some of the science instruments. And we test them in a Mars thermovac chamber, so we can bring it to Mars-like temperatures. We can fill it with Mars gases, and we can pump it down to Mars pressure. And then we'll put rocks and different samples in there to scoop or to practice drilling. And then we'll be able to get portions, and we practice dropping them off to scales so that we know how much the real rover would be able to drop off to a science instrument.
So does the arm actually, while you're drilling, does the arm actually pick up a sample and bring it back into the mechanism?
It can. So as you're drilling, if you're picturing yourself with a hand drill drilling a normal hole, all the cuttings would come out because the drill bit has flutes cut into it. The cuttings come up the flutes and they spill out of the hole. We have the same kind of concept, only we put a tube around the drill bit. So as a sample, as the cuttings come up the flutes, they go into this tube, and then they're captured inside the drill. From that point, we can transfer them to our sample handling system, create a portion that's about the size of half a baby aspirin, and then drop it off to the different science instruments. We can also scoop. If we don't want to drill a hard material, we can take this scoop and we can go into soft material and acquire sample that way. And then the process is much the same to go about sorting it. We'll sieve it down to the right size and drop off a portion.
Before I move off to the next booth, I catch an unusual sight in the corner of my eye. A number of children laying flat on the ground, being driven over by a little six-wheeled robot designed to test rough terrain, as a presenter explains.
Those of you who have long hair, put it in front of your shoulder. That's the gal I was talking about.
Oh no, here it comes.
Brilliant.
You
don't feel like getting tangled up in hair. We feel a little bad about that. Okay, so this rover is a prototype. This is something we built to try and figure out how we should be building rovers on Mars. It's a little bit different than the ones that have flown to Mars, because it's got more wheels. We realized we didn't need that many wheels. Why put on extra wheels if you don't need them? Fewer things to break. Someday we'd like to send astronauts to Mars, but right now we just send robots.
Henry!
I know everyone here knows about the Curiosity rover that's landing on the 25th. Is standing on the shoulders of these little guys, This is a prototype for the Pathfinder mission that landed in 1997. Here we are in 2012. We're sending a bigger, gianter, more sophisticated rover. Thank you, everyone. Well done.
Thank you, Sarah. Moving along to the next booth is a Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. Launched back in 2005, it is still orbiting Mars, sending back data for future missions to the Red Planet. I'm speaking with systems engineer Kit Kennedy.
Hi, I'm Kit Kennedy, and I'm an engineer working on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. And so this booth is all about the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter and its scientific missions on Mars. And so basically this spacecraft arrived at Mars in 2006, was launched in 2005, and is currently orbiting around Mars and taking lots and lots of scientific measurements. It has two very high-resolution cameras that are taking pictures all the time of the surface. It has instruments that observe the weather on Mars, as well as a subsurface radar that maps subsurface features. And what else?
What are we actually looking at? This is a scale model?
This is a scale model of the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, so 1/4 scale. So basically, the antenna that you can see, the round thing, is 3 meters in diameter, so about as tall as this tent is here. And the solar panels are, I forget what their actual size is, but they are, 20 feet by 10 feet or so in size. So they're gigantic.
So it's an awesome...
And when this thing was filled with fuel, it weighed about the size of a female Asian elephant.
Wow.
So imagine launching that off of the Earth and all the way to Mars.
Excellent.
So.
Thank you for that.
A short walk up the steps to Building 180's lobby, I see for the first time the full-scale working model of the Mars Science Laboratory rover, nicknamed Curiosity. Weighing in at 899 kilos, it's 3 metres long, 2.8 metres wide, and 2.1 metres tall. I'm speaking with Mission Systems Manager Mike Watkins.
My name is Mike Watkins, and I'm the Mission Manager for Surface Operations of Curiosity, or the Mars Science Laboratory, which is the next rover on Mars, scheduled to land on Mars on the night of August 5th here in Pasadena, California. Now, what this rover does is somewhat similar to the previous rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, that we landed on Mars in 2004, but it has a lot more capability in terms of analyzing the samples that it takes on Mars. So we have a fantastic analytical laboratory inside the rover. that can do gas chromatography, mass spectrometry, and X-ray diffraction experiments on these samples. And we have a beautiful system to get those samples into the rover. We have a rotary percussion drill system along with a scoop. So we actually drill into the rock or scoop some rock tailings or soil samples of Mars, put them into the rover, tell us about the history of Mars. Do we find signs of ancient habitability? Do we find organic building blocks of life? Really then take the next step in Mars exploration to understand the history of Mars and the history of habitability on Mars.
And what are we actually seeing here in this booth?
Okay, so we are here at the open house, JPL's open house, and we're looking at our ground copy of Curiosity. It's a full-size copy. This does not have all of the computing operations. We have another copy that actually is kind of a full working model, and we keep it down in a more clean, special facility so we can test all the sequences and all the capabilities of the rover and sort of simulate what's happening on Mars. This is kind of a full-scale mock-up, and it looks just like the rover and lets the public get a feel for how big it is and how complicated it is and the kind of technologies that we're now sending to Mars robotically.
So this is unique. It's the first landing vehicle to have a nuclear isotope as its bouncer.
It's actually not the first one. So the Viking landers back in the 70s, they also had the same technology. And the big advantage for us is that it would allow us to pick the landing site anywhere on Mars where there's winter, and allows you to operate at night, operate in winter when it's colder. You don't rely on the solar power. The drill just takes rock samples. It's a rotary percussion, kind of, you know, like a masonry bit or like a jackhammer to get into the rocks on Mars, to get through that weathering layer. You know, all the rocks on Mars have been sitting out there on Mars for billions of years and exposed to ultraviolet radiation and exposed to, you know, to windblown sand. And you want to actually get through that weathering rind and down into the rocks that tell you the history of Mars when they formed. And so the drill is one of the big technology developments for this mission.
Is this vehicle semi-autonomous?
Yeah, exactly. It's semi-autonomous. So the rover sends down telemetry every day, generally via Mars Odyssey and Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. We can get a lot of data down by using those satellites as communication links for us. We look at that data, and we tell the rover what to do the next day. We send up a sequence of commands for the rover to execute. The rover has to be smart enough to know that to interpret what's going on and respond in case that sequence isn't quite right or in case it encounters something while driving that we didn't quite expect. So it uses the cameras, makes a stereo map as it's driving, knows not to drive off a cliff or up a slope that's too big or over rocks. And in addition, if something's overheating or something else has gone wrong, it knows to shut itself down and to call home. So basically, it has to be autonomous to get through each day, but the scientists on the Earth still tell it what to do the next day in general.
All right. Thank you very much.
Across from the mall to Building 186, the Von Kramer Visitor Center, we see a full-scale model of the Galileo spacecraft, the Mars rovers, Sojourner, Spirit and Opportunity, a sample of moon rock, and a piece of the Surveyor moon lander recovered by the Apollo astronauts in the 1970s. Next, we move along with the crowd to the Von Kramer Auditorium. To the sides of the auditorium, we see a full-scale mock-up of the Voyager 1 and 2, the deep space probes exiting our solar system as we speak. As we're seated to see the short movie, Journey to the Planets and Beyond, the JPL Public Relations Manager gives newcomers a welcome speech just before.
Because Curiosity is the theme. Well, Curiosity is also the name of what? Very good. Yeah, we've been working on that, haven't we? So it's a rover going to Mars. It's on its way there right now. And on August 5th, it's going to gently land, decelerating from about 14,000 miles an hour to zero, about 7 critical minutes, very near 10:31 time here in the Pacific time zone on Sunday, the 5th of August. So I hope you'll all keep an eye on us that night and wish us the best. If you haven't seen the animation of that landing, you can see it on YouTube on the jpl.nasa.gov. It's a very sobering thing to look at that landing. A complicated set of tasks. So let me ask a couple questions before we get started. How many of you are visiting JPL for the very first time today? Interesting. All right, great. And how many of you have ever visited jpl.nasa.gov? All right, well, that's encouraging too, because the wealth of information about this place, stories about the people, the science data, the science pictures are all in that website, and it links to many, many, many other different experiences. This is a special room because it's where the images that have been collected from around the solar system by many of the great spacecraft, including the Voyager spacecraft I'll talk about in just a second, were presented to the world for the very first time in the room that you're in. It's a very special place for us here at JPL. And in that, I want to tell you a little bit about the Voyager spacecraft on your right. It launched in 77. There were two of them. They went to Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, flew by all those planets, called the Grand Tour. They took the first pictures, the close-up pictures of those planets, and certainly the first pictures ever in any detail of the moons of those planets. They're an amazing contribution to human knowledge about our solar system. And right now, both of those two spacecraft, the brother and sister of this device, this is the third one that stayed back, and the other two were launched. Both spacecraft are at the edge of our solar system, breaking through the influence of the solar winds. And at some point, the scientists are going to grumble together and say that they come to agree that this is the moment that one of those spacecraft have left the solar system, when they're no longer being influenced by the solar winds. So that's just a kind of an example of the scope of some of the stories you can hear here. It's a place full of curiosity, and kids, I hope you'll take advantage of that. Ask lots of questions if people want to answer your questions. So without holding you back any further, may I present Welcome to the Solar System, the Planets, and Beyond, narrated by Han Solo, also known as Harrison Ford. Have a great time. Glad you're with us. Thank you very much, folks.
Our next port of call is Building 179, the Spacecraft Assembly Facility, which houses JPL's largest clean room. In fact, where Curiosity was packaged for shipment to Cape Canaveral.
Inside the clean room, the air is kept clean by a special ventilation system. On this side of the room, air is blown in while existing air is sucked out on the next side of the room. It's then recirculated with temperature filters and carbon filters before being blown back into the clean room. I got to get back to work.
Walking outside of Building 318 into the parking lot for the booth marked Mobility and Robotic Technologies. We're surrounded by all types of concept and test bots, ranging from the FIDO, Field Integrated Design and Operations Rover, which is an advanced mobility platform for research and prototype. Then we see the TRESS, the Team Robot Exploration and Science on Steep Areas. TRESS is designed to traverse cliffs in search of samples where no other robot can go. It uses anchor bots at the top of the cliff and the tethered bot that veers over the cliff. Then we have a Micro Arm 2, which is a planetary dexterous manipulator developed as a primary application for sample acquisition back in 1999. Then there is a project called STAR, which stands for Steep Terrain Access Robot. These bots are multi-legged bots designed to climb steep surfaces to collect samples and information. Next is the Arctic Analog Skarbark Exploration Rover, which was tested in Svalbard, descending steep inclines during its field tests in Norway. Finally, the Axel Robot System. It is a family of platforms aimed at providing versatile mobile platforms for target selection. After some time inspecting the various machines and their projects, I have a quick chat to Dmitry Zakskia.
So you're at the Axel Robotics booth, and you're looking at the Axel rover for a design for extreme mobility and terrain. My name is Dmitry Zajitsky. I work at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in the Software Robotics Software Group. The Axel rover has been several years in the making. The prototype we're on right now consists of a 30-kilogram robot that actually consists of two identical parts. It's a cylinder with two actuated wheels, so the wheels can be driven independently. It has a science bay, two cameras, a variety of different instruments, and the basic principle of operation is a tether. We have a central section that can be parked up on site, somewhere where it's sunny, where the solar panels can provide energy and heat for the main rover. The rover can be dropped over the cliff and can descend into canyons and can also collect samples and also go inside caves. The rover has also been considered for Earth applications, such as exploration of ocean bottoms and exploration of the ice shelf underneath.
OK,
Okay, and you said the operating system you're currently using is Linux?
Yes, the operating system is Gentoo Linux. We do our own distribution to match our hardware. We use an Atom-based processor, 1.6 gigahertz, hyper-threaded. It's a PC104 stack, which basically allows you to add different components. The motors are Maxon motors. The Elmo controllers are the ones that are used to control the motors. Everything's being done through the CAN bus.
So you have a lot of graduate students working on these?
We have several graduate students from Caltech and also from international institutions. And we also are taking actually undergraduate students as well to assist through various NASA programs.
Okay, and you said you're taking foreign students, European students?
That is correct, from European Space Agency and different sponsorships.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
The heartbeat of JPL is in Building 230, the Deep Space Operations Center. This is the centerpiece of Deep Space Tracking System, with sister tracking centers in Australia and Spain. We walk into the side of the Mission Control Center with its large wall displays and long lines of desks and control systems. To the right is the Mission Control, currently used for the Mars Science Laboratory team, with its various mission desks. The clock on the wall is ticking away the days to the landing on Mars. Curiosity has three antennas for communication. Two are for communication directly with NASA's Deep Space Network antenna on Earth using a radio frequency in the X-band, a 7 to 8 gigahertz. The third is for communication with the Mars orbiter using an ultra-high frequency UHF band, about 400 megahertz. This ends our journey at JPL and a small taste of the various displays and experiences that were on offer.
And this concludes today's episode. We hope you had fun with this trip around NASA's JPL Open House 2012. You can find the pictures and other information linked to this episode on our website at robotspodcast.com. The next episode will air on the 10th of August. Until then, goodbye. JPL with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.